certainly a question we should all wrangle with from time to time. What is it that I actually believe? The word believe is tossed about so haphazardly, as so many of our words are, that the intended definition of the word is sometimes unclear. For example, I once had a woman announce to me, "I don't believe in dancing." Her disbelief was fairly simple to prove unfounded. I could show her many examples of dancing, from Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers to New York City Ballet, whirling dervishes and conga lines. Dance indeed happens. Dance is easily proven to exist. Dance is not something we cannot believe in. One might not approve of dancing, but dancing must be believed in. The same thing is true with female priests. They exist. The point of this is that words are important, and how we use or misuse them is more important still. It's easy to become sloppy in the words we throw around. Too often we assume that everyone understands our intention and that we need not be cautious or careful about the words we choose. He does not mean everyone, nor does man. If it did, there would be no need for the words she or woman, no matter our tradition. We should mean what we say and say what we mean and be very intentional about our words. To do so requires thinking before speaking. Ask Rush Limbaugh how important it is to choose your words carefully. The list of remorseful talking heads and politicians who have misspoken is long indeed. Certainly, the example of the woman not believing in dancing is simplistic and even somewhat trite, but the point is important. Words matter. And moreover, so does taking stock of what we believe or believe in. The two being slightly different. Believing in seems to be more difficult than believing in our culture at present. We seem to be willing to believe most anything we hear on Fox or MSNBC, all the while finding it difficult to believe in anything that doesn't mesh with our cut and dry, black and white, supportable and without a shadow of a doubt way of categorizing and compartmentalizing that which is worthy of our belief. The early disciples seemed to have the same or at least a similar problem. They were traumatized by the crucifixion of their friend and leader, and they were very much afraid that those who had so easily found him guilty of blasphemy would find him guilty by association, and that their end would be the same as his, a painful and publicly humiliating death. We're not too surprised by their reaction when he appears to them in the room where they're huddled together in fear. At least we're not too surprised by their emotional reaction. They're described as being startled and terrified. Jesus Lee, apparently out of nowhere, stands among the group who, in our current way of describing, would be called having post-traumatic stress disorder, and rightfully so. Jesus says to them, "Peace be with you." And they did not respond, "And also with you." They were as terrified by that peace as were many of the dyed-in-the-wool 1928 prayer book defenders. The next half of the sentence is the curious and tricky part. We hear that the disciples thought they were seeing a ghost, as if seeing a ghost is a normal and acceptable thing. Ghost, okay, no problem. They would expect a ghost, but not Jesus. Return from the dead, in bodily form. Nope, can't go there, but a ghost would be okay. That's pushing it a bit far. I would imagine that most of us would have been lost in the early part of this, the ghost part. Or maybe not. Maybe we have open minds to that possibility. Maybe we can relate to the disciples imagining the apparition of Jesus coming to them in their time of fear and desperation, coming to them to offer words of comfort. What Jesus says to them is totally unexpected. He says, "Do you have anything here to eat?" He wants to show them that he's not a ghost or an apparition, but the real thing. He is. He is in bodily form. He is physical, perhaps in a different way, but in a way that can take in food. Is this physical incarnation any more difficult to believe than the first? The God made man in the form of an infant in a manger? Sometimes belief requires that we suspend our analytical minds, the part of ourselves that requires certitude. After this somewhat awkward moment between Jesus and his fearful disciples, we are told that he opens the scriptures to them, as he did with the two walking on the road to Emmaus. And what opening the scriptures seems to entail is telling them and opening for them the realization that this is an ongoing plan. That God has been opening this for his people from the beginning of time. That there is, in fact, nothing new, but more of the same plan, the same goal, the same God, the same plan for humanity. Jesus says to them, "These are the words I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled." This is the same story from the beginning. This has been the plan, that you would know God, that you would be in relationship with God. This is so much to believe. All this mystery and miraculous and out of our normal way of dealing in the world is such a stretch for our logical minds. Yet we want to believe. We want to attribute all the good things in our lives and equally all the bad things to God. But we suspend belief when it comes to the miraculous. God, we say, had something to do with my daughter's healing, my friend's change of attitude. But to believe that Jesus healed lepers and ate fish after his resurrection is too much of a stretch. What do we believe? And moreover, what do we believe in? Each Sunday, we profess our faith using the words of the Nicene Creed. That's the church's historic statement of belief. It begins with the words, "We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty." And most of us are not too terribly tripped up to that point, although some take issue with the definition of God as Father. Words are important and have different connotations for different folks. We continue defining God as maker of heaven and earth. We claim that we believe in all that is seen and unseen. And this is probably where we begin to have divergent understandings. What does all that is seen and unseen mean? UFOs? Ghosts? Jesus eating fish after the resurrection? In time, after making this statement week after week, year after year, we run the risk of finding ourselves lethargized by the rhythm of the liturgy. And we run the risk of proclaiming our statement of faith without giving any thought whatsoever to the words we are claiming as our own. What is it that we believe? What is it that you believe? What do you believe in? The disciples will hold up. They were scared and afraid. Jesus said to them what he so often said, "Peace be with you. Do not be afraid." They thought he was a ghost. That was a real possibility for them. That may or may not be a real possibility for us.
It's important to clarify, what do we believe?